Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, I'm Natalia Shpilova-Said, and I'm a host of New Books in Literary Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm delighted to speak today with Oksana Rosenblum, Ali Friedman, and Angelika Khyzhnya, editors of Quiet Spiders of the Hidden Soul, Mykola Nikbajan's early experimental poetry. The volume was published by Academic Studies Press in 2020. Lev Friedman is a Russian-born speech-language pathologist based in New York City. He writes and translates from Russian to English and facilitates translation projects and publications. His work has appeared in publications by Ugly Duckling Press and the Odessa Review. Most recently, he has written on the literary legacy of Mykola Bajan. Angelika Khyzhnya is a scholar and journalist. Her research interests include linguistic aspects of early 19th century Russian and Ukrainian prose, Ukrainian poetry of the 1920s, and the relationship between literature and visual arts. And Oksana Rosenblum is a Ukrainian-born art historian and translator residing in New York City. Oksana's projects have included visual research for the newly created museums of Jewish history in Warsaw and Moscow. Her poetry translations from Ukrainian have appeared in Kalina Review and National Translation Month. Thank you so much for joining me today, and congratulations on this translation project.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Natalia.
So to the Anglophone audiences, the name of Mykola Bajan is probably quite unknown. How would you introduce?
Well, normally I would lose any generalizations in this field. But if we are going for a brief formulaic answer, then the 1920s was, I believe, the best thing that happened to Ukrainian poetry in the last century. And an outburst of energy and creativity. And Bajan's was the brightest, the most impressive debut of the 1920s. And of course, we are talking about the debut per se, not the first book, because if we are talking first book, well, that probably should be Tichina. But if we are talking about this beginning of the career, it should be Bajan. And this book we composed, and probably I should say, this book rather than our book, because we are just humble editors and basically it's Bajan's book, yes. So this book covers the scope of Bajan's debut, 1923 to 1931, with the earliest poem written by 19 years old Bajan, and the last text presented is narrative poem The Blind Bars, which some consider his central text, and it was written when he was 27. One might assign quite a few isms to define Bajan's work. Of course, in the broadest sense, he was a modernist, and he fully fits into the paradigm of European modernism. Early in his career, when he is still in his teens, Bajan joins the Pan Futurists. Later on, his creative intuition, together with his fascination with Baroque and Romanticism, carried him away from Futurism. And I guess that Bajan of the late 1920s may be best defined as Expressionist. what stays throughout these changes is his fascination with texture, matter, matter of language, and matter of life. So the truth is that his work has its own logic that doesn't fit fully into any manifesto or aesthetic doctrine. With his futuristic exercises, he as if rescues, at least this is my understanding, that he as if rescues and sets on display the words, or sometimes just the clusters of sounds from the decayed discourse of romantic poetry. And now I'm talking 19th century Ukrainian romantic poetry, of course. He then amasses the primordial body of language, and he needs all of the language, not only its music, its transparency and beauty, but also its blood, sweat, semen, fat, sting, dirt. All of that often tied in impossible knot of syntax. And because we are speaking about with the Anglophone audience in mind, there might be a temptation to assign Bajan a title of, say, Ukrainian Eliot and such. But I would consider it counterproductive because, primarily because Anglophone audiences already has its Eliot and Pound. And Bajan, with his devotion to an understanding of Ukrainian culture, is first and foremost Ukrainian modernist, and I believe that he can be appreciated as such. So that would be my answer to this question, mm-hmm. as brief as possible.
Thank you, Angelika. So Angelika, you already touched a little bit on the project itself. And
now I'm not sure whether you can hear me.
We could hear you. And Oksana and Lev, would you add anything to this question about the project itself? What inspired this project? How you organize?
I want to address the previous question, and it's going to directly segue into my part of the answer for the inspiration of the project. And the question was, to the Anglophone audiences, the name of Mykola Bajan is probably quite unknown. And that's sort of how this book came about. And I'll go a little further. To the Ukrainophone audiences, the name of Mykola Bajan, the way that we have read it and reread it and read it again, and even Nick Bajan, actually, another Bajan, is also probably quite unknown. And now the inspiration for our project, Oksana.
that's a great answer. I'm actually an example of Ukrainian, partly Ukrainian audience, because I grew up in Ukraine, who didn't know much about Bajan at all. I think that part of the reason was that as I was, you know, growing up and studying Ukrainian literature in the 90s, there was such a huge focus on the circle of the executed Renaissance, Розстріляне відродження, and Bajan didn't quite fit that paradigm, that circle. And so when I encountered, quite by chance, one of his longer poems, which I ended up translating for this volume, Розмова сердець, Heart-to-Heart Conversation, it was really quite a shocking revelation for me that someone of that, the poet of that caliber, of that imaginative power, was not, you know, was not known as he deserved to be known. And so I basically sat for a couple of months with that poem, and I started translating it. And as I was thinking about getting the rights for the future publication, I was given a name of Lev, who was in touch with Mykola Bajan's grandson, who holds the copyright. And we met and had a very productive discussion, and this is how it all started.
So I don't speak Ukrainian. I don't read Ukrainian. My Ukrainian, so to speak, or my lack thereof, is then compensated by the sort of reductive Ukrainian that a Russian ear hears. My English is okay. My Ukrainian is well. I make up for it with the other people that I've surrounded myself with to help me and for me to help them. And I was ironically or perhaps sadly inspired by the fact that so many people were in the precise situation that Oksana described. I found these people a little bit before I met Oksana, and I met Oksana because I found these people, and it came from a much older Mykola Bajan, not a 19-year-old Mykola Bajan. It actually came from my having discovered his, let's call it an expose on the massacre at Babyn Yar in outside of Kiev. A poem, pretty much primary source narrative of what was left of a massacre, the Holocaust, and how I wound up with modernist poetry is that I tried to bring that to people that hadn't heard it. And I was absolutely mortified by the fact that, no pun intended, this poem was buried. And like a lot of other things that were buried about Bajan or sort of cast aside. And I knew nothing of the early Bajan. And I in fact, Bajan to me was first was a person that did a thing, later became a writer who wrote literature, so to speak. He was a person with a humanist act. And Oksana came to me, and I thought I was already done. My mission was to have shown people that someone other than Yevgeny Yevtushenko, some other non-Jew, bothered to catalog what happened to Jewish people in 1941 to 43 outside of Kiev. And I thought I was done. I did that thing. And then Oksana comes to me, and I established a whole world of contacts trying to get to this point. I wanted to get to the bottom of this, why this happened, and to get to translate it. And some of the people that translated that later, I remobilized them for this task, and then some exponentially. But Oksana came to me and said that, by the way, Bajan wrote all this crazy poetry that I didn't even know about, says Oksana. Somewhat literary scholar of literature, certainly compared to myself. And I said, wow, well, this seems to, I seem to be hearing the same tune again, and I was sort of motivated to again bridge this gap. And it was something that we had to do because it simply hadn't been done. It should have been done. A name that we just heard, T.S. Eliot, but we shouldn't even have to compare him to T.S. Eliot because T.S. Eliot did not write in Ukrainian, and this is Ukrainian caliber. Why does that person need an introduction? Why do Ukrainians need to be introduced? Why English speakers don't need to be introduced to T.S. Eliot. They need to be taught T.S. Eliot when they are younger than us, And so this was what I was confronted with. And I also was confronted with something I did know, which was the Soviet regime that I was born into, and that had a very canny way of doing this thing to people. And generally those people were meant to be found out later. And all of us have done precisely that. And this just seemed to be another example of just how effective this sort of subtle casting to the side to not be found by people who cannot find what they do not know to find. And that is precisely what we sought to, unearth and this absolutely raging but quiet work and quiet poetry that needed to be brought out, needed to be put back in context.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate how the volume is organized, starting with the title of the book, because it's bilingual. And you also include the Ukrainian version and the translation. You include the critical essays. And you also include commentaries, which is very helpful. So would you tell us a little bit about how you arranged this book, whom you approached for maybe help or for some contributions in terms of critical essays, and what kind of message did you want to send to the audiences by constructing, let's put it this way, by constructing this volume in this particular way, starting with the very first page, with the very first encounter, so to speak, with a book with the title that it appears to the Anglophone audiences in two languages, Ukrainian and English?
So I can start, and then Lev and Angelica, please add to that. So starting with the title of the volume, interestingly, although not surprisingly, this it was suggested by one of our translators, Svetlana Lavochkina, who did a great job, amazing job, translating one of Bajan's most, you know, important poems, like The Night of Hoffman. And she suggested us this idea of having, you know, the title that does not necessarily translate exactly, you know, word by word from Ukrainian into English. So, and it resonated with us. And but interestingly, not everyone loved the title. We had some pretty strong opposition from at least one person in the project, but we felt strongly about it. We felt that it was, you know, sending a message to the audience about Bajan's work, which, you know, which often has to do with dreamlike spaces. For example, you know, in the poem that I was working on, Rozmova Serdets, basically it's a phantasmagoria, and the lyrical hero is kind of half dreaming, half living it. So it's an important aspect of his work. In terms of how this came to be as a project, it's a huge project that started, you know, very slowly, and it started basically with text search. So the first thing we had to do, it was almost like an archaeological search for the text. And one has to understand that a lot of Bajan's poetry was scattered, especially his early poetry. It's been scattered between journals of the 1920s. And it took us some time to locate those. And even some of the collection, like Rizblanatin, the sculpted shadow, I believe that we were in touch with the Bajan Museum in Kyiv about it for quite some time. It took us a good few months to get that collection. Mm. And then we knew that we had to gather a team of translators, and we really wanted it not to be a strictly academic project, even though we wanted this to be a good work, a solid work. And that's why, you know, as you rightly, you know, noticed, there are notes, there are essays in this volume, and we worked really hard on them. They went through multiple editorial stages. But we wanted to really give freedom to our translators to explore different ways of translating, because there are really different schools of translation, and we didn't want to kind of impose our own views on them. Mm-hmm. And so So our team of translators included people who were, you know, who were well-known scholars, like, for example, Amelia Glazer or Professor Miroslav Shkandy or Ainsley Morse, but also people who are, you know, younger, but still already well-known translators like Irina Shuvalova and Ostap Kin, or Roman Turovsky, who is not a scholar, but is a wonderful artist and a musician. Basically at the core of our work was, you know, this gathering this translation team and making sure that people who are involved in this project, that they have the freedom to explore.
So if there's someone who is alive and is, I'm not calling out anyone who is alive and working on Bajan right now, please give us a call. But at a certain point, that was the case. Although I never did it on air. If there was someone who was working on Bajan, who had worked on Bajan, who was tangible, reachable, amenable, we probably talked to them. Or we certainly not for lack of trying. Here, you know, abroad, far abroad, people that had done translations of similar caliber. There is a whole constellation outside of the constellation of people that are in this book. I mean, 15 is a very conservative number. You know, if I had to make a web, pardon the pun, of the amount of people that we approached and the people that they suggested to us, someone suggested their, you know, someone who had written about Bajan said, I have a promising student that's doing some work on Bajan right now. Let me get you in touch. That person later wound up editing the piece that the student wrote. That person, let's say, had written the book on Bajan, but couldn't do this translation. You know, we're working with family in different generations. For every person that is in this book, there are probably three that weren't. This had never really been done before, and if it had, we wouldn't have had to. And since we were doing it and it hadn't been done, we wanted to be given the freedom to be done and perhaps be done in multiple ways, because if no one has really seen this stuff before in a way that was then transferable, how should one dictate how it should be done? You know, there is sort of no single rail to follow. So, you know, we have Eleonora Sleve, for instance, who wrote our epilogue. You know, there were other people in Ukraine who could not. There was a whole community, in fact, that pointed their fingers to her and said, I can't, but she should. You know, her contemporaries, you know, there were people that said, I can't really do English. You know, I wish I could. There were people that were saying, I can't really type anymore. While I've been working on Bajan, there are a number of his contemporaries that literally died that I never got the chance to call. I had their phone numbers. You know, Bajan's own In terms of legacy, Moisey Fishbein, who was Bajan's secretary and at a certain point his protege, he passed away before this book was published. We could have gotten him into this book had there been a chance. Could have interviewed him. There were. I don't mean to highlight the effort, but this was certainly an effort. You know, Halina Babak was devoting day and night to this. The person that wrote the introduction. I found a draft online, thank you, internet, of what she was writing while she was writing it. She's like, you guys are doing this too? You know, Professor Hrabovich has been working on the Blind Bard's Debussy since, he's been thinking about it since roughly Woodstock, right about 1969 or so. you know, where he goes throughout the nomination for the Nobel for Emilian Prytzak, who actually was the one that was credited for it. He was a student. And so, yeah, he agreed. You know, if there was someone doing this, we wanted them to help us do this. And what you see is the result of a lot of asking and a lot of prodding and a lot of telling people, I want you to do this. And then it was, do what? Have a look before you say anything. Just take a look. And then the answer would be like, what? And then the answer would be like, I wish I could, but how? And then the answer would be, well, I think I have someone who knows how, mm-hmm. but can't quite do it. You know, maybe you guys can put your two hemispheres together, your knowledges of English. I mean, look at the different last names and the, you know, just in the arsenal of translators and writers. And you get a small idea of, you know, the people that we've put together. And we've tried to gather as many strengths as we could to balance ourselves out. Look at even the three of us right now, you know. So that kind of is one of the critical aspects of this book, people coming together.
As you pointed out, you have the scholars who contributed to this volume, and they are not only from the U.S., but from Ukraine, for example, and from Canada. I really enjoyed reading Eleonora Salovey's afterword, which gave some sort of completion to the volume. However, it's very hard to say that there is any completion to the volume because it still stays quite open. It invites further investigations. It invites further translations as well. And I have this question to you all as translators. What is the most challenging part of translating Bajan? Oksana and Lev, you pointed out that you appreciate freedom, which your translators enjoy, and you want to provide this freedom to your translators as well. But still, we still have to somehow translate Bajan to Anglophone readers, and we still have to give them some sense of what Bajan is. So maybe just a couple of words on those most challenging aspects of translating Bajan in particular. And maybe just like a side question to this one, what is the poem or maybe a prose fragment written by Bajan that touched your soul the most? I use the word soul because it is included in the title of the book, and I really like the title. I think it's very deep. It's very rich, and of course, it evokes other associations, particularly with the Gogol as well, because we always talk about different souls for Gogol, but why not for Bajan in this case as well?
Hidden souls versus dead souls. Yes.
Yes. I can start. It's a wonderful question, and also it's an enormous question, Natalia. But I could mention just a few things, perhaps, that one of the most difficult things I found when translating Bajan is simply his language and his vocabulary. It's incredibly rich and complex, and at times arcane, and he uses the vocabulary that you wouldn't find in a dictionary, and sometimes it's simply because these words are no longer part of the active language, so you have to do, you know, some research to find out. And sometimes he is creating his own language, his own vocabulary, which, you know, a good example of that are his more, you know, experimental futuristic pieces like Circus or the Elegy for Circus Attractions. One of the examples I could bring is the word from his poem Imobe of Galam. And Angelica and I had a special discussion about it because we really could not for a long time find out what it was. So the word, the poem is basically is about the struggle of Senegalese people against the colonial regime. And the vocabulary has some French influence in it. And the word that we stumbled upon was bamboula. And based on the context, it was really hard to say what it was. And our ideas ranged from it being a kind of a drum to possibly being a flower that blossoms at night. And I remember that we had to ask the Facebook community, and it took some time, and finally we settled on, you know, the idea that this is some kind of a flower, a baobab tree flower that blossoms at night. But this is just one of the examples of, you know, of what Bajan creates in his poetry. And and maybe tomorrow, you know, someone comes in and challenges our translation. It's quite possible. So Angelica, would you like to add something? Because Angelica did a wonderful job editing the volume. She is really someone who worked deeply, engaged with all our translators.
Well, yes, to be precise, I served as a Ukrainian language editor for this volume. So I observed all the struggle of our translators with the text. Or like if we are to describe translation as a sophisticated dance of two languages, I consider it is my job to look out for English not to step on Ukrainians' feet or like something is inevitably lost in translation. So I was trying to see that we lose as little as possible. And just so speaking of difficulties, I guess Oksana already mentioned the main difficulty, and the main difficulty is Bajan's language, and it's just worth noticing. I don't know whether it was it's fully supported by statistic, but I just know that Bajan is considered as the poet with the richest vocabulary. So in terms of how many words he uses, how many words he knows, like how many registers he uses, like he's one. So our translators often had often had difficulty with facing this mountain or abyss for some abyss of language. And his syntax and even orthography at times may be a bit idiosyncratic. So I just might recall there were these lovely, lovely words such as mevo, birgalka, lihati, slup. And of these, birgalka was rather usual in 1920s, and now nobody remembers that it's a place where people drink beer, and lihati is a verb. And last time I heard this verb was 35 years ago from my grandmother. Mm. So I was extremely pleased to see that Bajan knows this verb, but nobody else. I guess it was for this project, it was myself and Bajan. So I had to deal with the translator not knowing what is this and like interpreting it like in a weird way. Or sometimes even his morphology or spelling is rather confusing. Like, for example, there is this very regular noun "mzhichka," which means it's really same war and rain, some between fog and drizzle. And Bojan just converts it into "mhichka," and translator cannot recognize this as "mzhichka," so he thinks that it comes from "mihaty" as flesh. And so mzhichka, drizzle becomes flashed, and then we have to deal with that. Or like sometimes the Bojan uses the epithets, and it comes from folklore. And it's not that clear for the translator that there is this folkloric connotation, say, it's a poem about captive maidens, and there is this adjective "jasny," and translator thinks, okay, captive maidens, they are poor girls, they are probably exhausted, so he translates "jasny" as pale, while definitely for Bojan it's not pale, it's fair, so it's more like fair maidens. So this is something to keep in there. If there is folklore there is this folklore streak, like it should stay. Or there was a separate group of problems associated with the names of plants, and I guess this is a sign of our time, because we are less familiar with botany and definitely we see less nature than Bojan did. So, for example, there was this line "Zelena ruta proroste na zhovtomu pisku." So it's literally, it's green rue will sprout on the yellow sand. But in Ukrainian, and in English, ruta or rue is two different plants. Like in Ukrainian, it's green plant with bright red flowers. And in English, ruta is grayish. And it actually symbolizes sorrow. So definitely rue in English doesn't work for the symbol of hope the way Bojan uses it. So. No, there was this layer of complications, and this can go on forever. Oh, I should pros- the last thing I should possibly mention aside of dictionary is Bojan's syntax, because his syntax sometimes is very complex, so it's really difficult. Like if you are not as immersed into this and not as familiar with the language especially, so there is difficult language and difficult syntax, and the two combined together, sometimes people were unable to understand where is to define subject and predicate in a sentence. So literally I had to do this very plain translation, plain, unimaginative, but they would explain what's going on in the sentence, and then the translator is free to render this poetically.
Thank you, Angelica. While you were describing how you were trying to find those meanings in English or for Ukrainian terms or for Ukrainian words, I was thinking about spider webs, because it's really so complicated and intertwined. And it sounds like you were working on this very micro levels of the language, and those micro levels were opening up some other micro levels. So it's so complex, but all these elements are so tightly connected that in order to give some translation, probably those webs had to be untangled, or you had to apply some other techniques to somehow translate and deliver those messages in English. But fascinating description of how you were working with the language on all those multiple levels. Thank you. And Lev, what was the challenge for you?
First of all, I just wanted to pun on the web. Mark Zuckerberg probably has a very nice archive, in fact, of conversations in Facebook translation forums of single words. And for me, it was fun. It was just kind of like, have at it, guys. Here's a text. And every now and then I would check in, and in a place where I saw nothing resembling Bajan, all of a sudden there was something between a conversation, an argument, a research, all of the above, pages of it. It's pages and pages of comments about a word. Just one word. It's all still there. You know, some of these were conversations, you know, arguments, you know. It was incredible. And at some point I was chiming in, I'm like, I'm sorry. hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Yeah. I was almost tempted to apologize sometimes because I felt like, forget the spiders. It was like a can of worms that opened up, you know? So my challenge in translating Bajan is that I can't. We are all the audience and the readership of our own book, you know, in different strata. And I'm not an Anglophone reader. I was born in Moscow. I speak Russian. I've disqualified myself from it. But I'm not anything phone reader for this. I'm a reader. You know, I had people write this book for me. And so those who can't, well, I found those who could. And they found those who could. So for me, it was very easy. Like, I didn't even have to ask myself whether I was competent enough. I was incompetent enough to do this. To produce a record of instruments I can't possibly play. There's a poem in there called To My Friend. And after Oksana and I were digging, we found these texts. I look at these texts, and what little I could gauge of just the feel of something, it was more of like this weird synesthesia constantly. And I looked at it, and I knew what I was reading. I was reading in Russian, not in Ukrainian, not in that Ukrainian. There is no that Ukrainian. So, you know, it's a richer, as Angelica was saying, it's something of itself. But I saw this poem, To My Friend, and before I handed it over to a person, and literally handed it over, I'm like, translate this. He's like, okay, what is this? So before I did that, and this was a person who had never been published translating Bajan until I found him, and he helped me work on that Holocaust poem. The poem is called To My Friend, and this one spoke to me, and it's going to touch on certain words that I already heard just now in conversation. So it was the dry hysterics of the quill, convulse on paper in silence, a ruthless, heartless game of chase between the heart and the word, and the manic pulse of agonies fills the quill's chimeric twists. So as a poetic gastronome, you take no notice how the year grows. You notate in your hysterical delight the squalid rhymes, the heart's rotten pulp. In fact, you try in vain to find an abyss in a flat word. And all of it was happening in translating these very things, you know. There were people taking no notice of how late it was at night, you know, and these manic twists and the chase between the heart and the word, all of it. So it was almost... It was almost a singularity being created. So that is my answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I would like to go back to the afterword, which was written by Eleonora Solovey. And there is a fragment in her piece where she says that there is this need to rediscover Soviet literary legacy and reread Soviet literary legacy. And this is obviously true for Bajan. Maybe would you share just a couple of ideas on how, or thoughts on how Bajan is rediscovered in Ukraine today? if your research touches upon this aspect, or maybe I believe Liv, you mentioned something at the beginning of our conversation that to many, unfortunately, Bajan is not known even in Ukraine.
I'm gonna go out there, and I want to be wrong. I've spent years now wanting to be wrong. He's not. He isn't. You know, I hope that, you know, at least half this book is in Ukrainian, a lot of it, because it has the Ukrainian words on the title. I hope people will. You know, he isn't. He isn't to the extent that he should be is. You know, there was a book recently, and it was actually Serhiy Zhadan, who's a famous Ukrainian poet right now, came over here while we were preparing our book proposal, pieces of our manuscript, and he was here on tour of his new book, and he brought a copy of the book with him from Ukraine. We had no idea it existed. And a friend said, Lev, you guys are working on the Bajan book, right? Here's one. We're like, here's one what? I remember Oksana probably remembers this. Here's a book about Bajan, yeah. You know? And there we were, they're traveling from New York to Pennsylvania, from reading to reading. And we're getting scans of this book from the bus. A friend is like, that was happening. So nothing. And then something, you know, came out.
I think you're referring to Vera Aheyeva book, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, it was actually, it's an important book, and it's the first biography of Bajan, but it is not a definitive biography. So there are still a lot of gaps there, and the hope is that as KGB archives have become open, and we tried really hard to get access to some of those materials, but we were not able to, mm-hmm. Due to just technical issues, so that more of his, you know, of his life, of his fate will be known to people. And I don't want to disagree with Lev, because I know that there is definitely truth to what he says, but I want to hope that there is more interest in Bajan right now, and mm-hmm. I've certainly seen more publications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Publications that illuminate different sides of him. For example, his input into the film movement, and but there is a lot that needs to be done. There is really a lot in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and probably we should add, like, rather often it's not even a matter of goodwill, but a matter of money, and sometimes even goodwill, you know, requires some money. Like, say, that same Vera Aheyeva mentioned. It was a while ago, I guess, but I guess nothing changed since then. Until now, we don't have academic edition of Bajan. So I think it shouldn't be actually about biography. It should be about corpus of text. Yes, the corpus of text should be accessible, It's poetry, yes, it's about text, it's not about biography. And we still don't have this academic edition. We have this edition for among the poets of 1920, we only have this academic edition for Rilsky, and that's it, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. So we can really talk about, like, cultural digestion, so to say, of Bajan. We don't have this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of
So it's not a question of blame. Somewhat, there is, you know, we need predicate in order to build. We have to go back to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of need as well in terms of maybe not reinventing, but rediscovering, right? Even the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s, which were constructed for us by the Soviet criticism, by the Soviet ideology. And of course, unfortunately, for some reason, a lot of Ukrainian writers are perceived as very traditional in terms of how they are presented to audiences. And we always somehow envision them as old poets. The best example here probably will be Shevchenko, who is always presented to us as our Ukrainian father of Ukrainian poetry, who is always shown, presented in his later years, but not as a young man who is full of enthusiasm and full of even humor. I think this is quite true for the Ukrainian writers of the 20th century as well. And unfortunately, Bajan to some extent is also one of them. And again, well, I want to go back to Eleonora Soloveitch afterward. Well, I had a great pleasure of meeting Eleonora Soloveitch when I was in Kyiv. So I was very happy to read her piece as well in your volume, where she really presents him as a very complex personality with his own struggles, with his own traumas, maybe as well, with his own fears and with his own battles with those fears as well. And it's on the one hand, it's sad that this part of story is lost to many readers. But as you pointed out, there is this hope that there will be new interest and some new perspectives will be explored. And your volume is one of those contributions to this rediscovery.
Thank you.
I would... Liu?
No, I was just saying, by the way, you might find this interesting. The amount of phone conversation and Skyping that took place to get that afterward, and just the discussion, what did we put in there exactly? What don't we put in there? How do we frame that? You know? And, you know, it was a question that Slavik was never asked to do this before, you know, write an afterword about the early work of Bajan. It's like, and where do we stop? Mm-hmm. What comes next? You know, we meant to cut it off and say to be continued. That's not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to mention the other stuff because it's like a dot, 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 and then the remains of the day. You know what happens next. You know, we have pictures of these people in their later years. We don't have pictures of these people because look what happened to their youth. You know, if you were born in year X, here's what happened to everyone in year Y. Some people were the executed Renaissance. Some people were the unexecuted, but goodbye Renaissance. You know, and invalidated for having survived, which is a whole other can of worms, so to speak. But yeah, just the conversation that went into, well, how do we formulate? What exactly are we trying to say?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
So my final question will be about your current projects. Are you working on anything specific at this moment, or you're just taking a break after you completed this volume?
Well, as a team, we are not really working on anything right now, although I think I'm kind of getting itchy in that sense, you know, because it was really wonderful to have that experience of working with Lev and Angelica specifically. And I felt like our collaborations became so much stronger. So it remains to be seen. I mean, there was an idea, just as an idea, you know, to have to look at the later Bajan,
mm-hmm.
and his later
mm-hmm.
poetry, and to have it translated. But yeah, at this moment, we don't have any particular plans, but we'll see.
The first time I stuck my neck out, you know, my neck was found eventually. I started with an article, one little article, which I thought would kill me, the amount of work that went into that. Then we have this book. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I have Oksana and Angelica. Should the next Oksana come by and ask us to do something, three times the magnitude, perhaps on later Bajan and everybody else, I kind of am sensing that there is more. I forget which scholar said this at some point in this whole Bajanathon, who said, you're opening a door, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just in the most recent Zoom reading that we did, we keep hearing this. You're opening a door. It's an invitation. This book may be seen as an invitation. An invitation to please argue with us. You know, write more. You know, create the anti quiet spiders. Just do something. You know, or maybe we'll have to do something.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, nicely put. It's an invitation, Angelica.
Well, I have some minor project, maybe, which stems from this one, because I worked. No, it's not that I worked. I think I should be more modest in this case, and I should say that I helped one of our translators to work on the texts of Bajan's literary secretary, Moisei Fijubain. I guess it's almost a year since his passing. But I was able to communicate with Fijubain back a year ago. Yeah, so there is that. So it's still a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I mean, not every project is as swift and can be done as swiftly as this one. And of course, like, you know, it requires a team to do things. So actually, yeah, I'm also looking forward. I'm pretty much looking forward to working with this exact team. Mm-hmm. If it happens.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. And again, congratulations on this teamwork, and congratulations on this wonderful project. And thank you for translating Bajan into English and for making him available to English readers. And thank you for this conversation today. Thank you, Oksana.
Thank you so much, Natalia, for inviting
thank you for having us.
Today I spoke with Oksana Rosenblum, Lev Friedman, and Angelika Hizhnya, editors of Quiet Spiders of the Hidden Soul, Mykola Nikbajan's Early Experimental Poetry. The volume was published by Academic Studies Press in 2020. Thank you for listening to New Books in Literary Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network.